At the third stroke, it will be...
Hello, beautiful people, and thank you for tuning in to the October edition of the EUC Digest Throwdown. We're in the middle of the conference season, so loads of news to cover today. I am Ingmar Vrij, the host of this month's episode, and today I'm joined by Eric, Jits, Johan, and Kees, who've submitted some great topics. This month, we've opened another Clubhouse voice room where everyone is free to drop in, join us live while we record, and have the opportunity to participate and share your opinions. When you are in the Clubhouse voice room, just raise your hand and we'll invite you to the stage and then open your mic. This episode will be available on our YouTube channel, so to which you can subscribe, and on your favorite podcast player. So thank you for tuning in. Sit back and enjoy. But first, let us highlight our sponsor who makes it possible to create another episode of EUC content.
Liquidware provides adaptive workspace management solutions for all Windows desktops. The company products encompass all facets of management to ensure the ultimate user experience across all workspaces, physical, virtual, DAS, or in the cloud.
And if you're interested in sponsoring the next season of this show, send us an email to info@eucdigest.com. How are you guys doing? Jits, you just came back from a well-deserved holiday. What was that like?
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Really enjoyed the good weather over in the southern part of Spain. So, yeah, really enjoyed that one. Especially if I look at the window right now here in the Netherlands. It's, well, cold and rainy. But then again... It's all good, right? I mean, it's good to be back here together with all of you in the EUC Digest Throwdown. So I was looking forward to that as well.
It's good to hear. And by the way, weren't we supposed to do this like in person? We're now all at home. How about next time on that we do this in person somewhere where we can just actually have a real beer together?
Yeah. Let's
work on that. Sounds like a plan. Yep.
Or the non-alcoholic ones.
Yeah, sure. Non-alcoholic IPAs, whatever. Eric, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thank you.
Settled in at Microsoft?
How are you doing? Because you're always asking us, but how are you doing?
That's the easy way. No, just ask the others.
That's not the right way to say it, Eric. You have to say, how you doing?
How you doing? How you doing?
Can't complain. Doing well. Yeah. Case, how are you doing?
Well, hold up. So... you can't complain. You just came back from your first business trip, didn't you?
That's a good one. Yeah, I can't complain. It's actually fun, exciting, and kind of weird. Stepping into a plane or actually just booking the flight. It's been so long that I had to book a flight in our corporate system that I didn't know how to. It took me a while to actually find the flight, the hotel, getting everything sorted so that the expenses are going to work as well. But yeah, I mean, for the rest, it's just a flight as ever. Wearing a mask, that's fine. I went to Prague, to one of our offices. We had a workshop. It was really, really good. Meeting people in person who I never met because some joined a year and a half ago. They've been into the office for 2 weeks and then, well, all hell broke loose. So, yeah, it is energizing to see people working with them and, you know, working towards the future. So we discussed a lot of great things, which we're not going to cover because that's just too soon. But, yeah, it's good. Thanks for asking, Case.
Hey, you're welcome.
Did you have your first flight planned already, Case?
Not yet. So, but it's becoming to become a topic again. So I just had a request to fly to the UK again, which right now I declined because of the current situation and kind of the rules that I have to figure out before I even commit to flying again, because different countries, different rules. Even different regions, different rules. So I have to figure that out before I can comfortably step into a plane again. Otherwise, I'm just sitting here in my fancy loft, just going down the rabbit hole of new things to add to kind of the home office. So the nano leaves that Johan has on his wall, I've got similar nano leaves because he kind of forced them up to me. He forced me to buy them. At least that's what I'll tell my wife when she discovers that I bought a few of them.
Gun to the head, right? Gun to the head.
Exactly. So, you know, like yourself, I'm happy sitting here in the loft and seeing your smugs again doing this podcast.
Yeah. And talking about conferences, Johan, we're going to cover some nice conferences today. But first, how are you doing? Do you have like a trip or a conference plan in this year?
Oh, dude, yeah. Oh, man. So I tweeted today that for the first time in 18 months, I'm going to present on an actual stage, with an actual audience.
Uh-huh.
At IGL Disrupt. Disrupt is normally it's twice a year. I think it's a big conference. But what they did because of COVID is kind of do an on-tour thing. And they're coming to the Netherlands in the last week of November, and I'm going to be one of the speakers. So I'm kind of, it kind of feels again like the very first time that you are preparing for a session and going on stage. And it's not that I'm like nervous, but feel kind of tense. And it always helps me to to really prepare for a presentation. But I'm beyond excited for it. So that's something I have in schedule. Looking forward to.
Cool.
Just out of curiosity,
this is the last week of November, right?
So you're showing a screen of your phone, but
that's
no one.
That's the IGL Disrupt.
So,
just out of curiosity, if I we're all doing these sessions now. Maybe we pre-record those or we do those live. But as I see myself doing presentations, just sitting behind the same webcam as I'm talking to you now, right? I'm just, when I prepare for a session, I just grab a couple of decks. And during that presentation, I'll just jump from one deck to the other. And that always ends up with the question in the end, can you share the deck with us? And then I'm thinking, oh, shit, which slides out of which deck did I use? But this is something you cannot longer do if you're on a in front of a live audience, right, on a stage, because then it's just one deck
did
and one
really
deck only.
Did you just say,
right?
Oh, shit? Because now we have to.
Oh, we can do that. We can bleep it out if necessary. Yeah. But
or we have to flag it.
Well, people who visited one of my my sessions in the recent like 3 to 4 years know that I am
more into
my sessions
storytelling.
Involve a lot of storytelling, and I use my slides as help to get the story out. It's not that based on my slides people can kind of relate to what I said because they're like massive pictures on them or just a slide with a single word. I did manage to export the slides as a PDF and send them to the IGL team already. But I'm going to do a lot of really, really awesome live demos. I actually built it's next to me, unable to show it right here. But I got a NUC Extreme with a GeForce card in it, and it's passed through to E6i. I'm going to show live demos with VR offloading inside Workspace ONE, as well as Horizon, utilizing Cloud XR technology from NVIDIA, and it's going to be really, really sick.
Cool.
Does that have to do with IGL?
Come attend the event.
You need an endpoint to actually be able to see that.
Yeah. No, I think what IGL did is not necessarily organize an event. So that's Disrupt is not specifically tied to IGL.
No,
they kind of like create a universal kind of EUC event. And sure, it's there is some IGL related topics are being presented, but I know for a fact that Citrix is there as well. Microsoft is there, so there are all sorts of different EUC vendors, sharing knowledge, and I think that's what the whole Disrupt brand is all about.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll
they're,
see you
they're
there.
Breaking boundaries, and I think it's a cool conference also that they're now having multiple conferences across the globe, various speakers, various. I mean, the sponsors are typically the same. You get various insights because there are different attendees. But also different presenters. So I'm looking forward to the Utrecht version where you are and some others are who I'm interested in seeing. So I'll definitely attend. And by the way, a couple of weeks ago at the Dutch Citrix User Group, I can totally relate to the like the unknown factor of like, hey, being on stage, what was that again? It's been so long that you were kind of nervous, but not really, but you know, it was different. So anywho, perhaps this is the right segue into the first topic of today, because we are in the middle of conference season, which means vendors invite customers, partners, and analysts and indulge them in all the new solutions they have to offer. Some are already available, but presented in a more cohesive story filled with use cases instead of features. And at other conferences, we get to see a glimpse of what we can expect in the near future. Now, since we all have our own preference and background, I thought it's, you know, it's better to let everyone give their highlights of each conference. Johan, since you are the VMware guy here, passionate about VMware, can you give a kick off with VMworld on what happened and was really the key highlights in the EUC space?
Yeah, definitely. And VMworld this year was, again, virtual like every other conference. Hopefully it's the last one, because the new VMworld dates already have been announced for both the US version as well as the Europe version, both physical and hopefully, they can, you know, continue to be organized.
Hey, Johan. Just to kind of refresh my memory, how many sessions did you do this year at the virtual VMworld?
Yeah. So I submitted just one, and I got to present four. You know, that's like the same as last year as well. Last year, I submitted two sessions, got five in. For some reason, people tend to know how to find me, and suddenly, you know, you have a crap load of work of creating all the sessions, pre-record everything. Two of the four sessions this year were Simulive, so you have to actually attend the session, because there's kind of a Q&A, an interactive option in the, or component in those sessions. But yeah, and one of the topics I'll cover in here is where three of the four sessions were about. So let me cover that in a moment. VMworld this year was really awesome. Not just, you know, it was virtual, yes, but what was VMware in general is not a company that specifically, you know, touches EUC or covers EUC. They do the whole shebang. And what was really awesome for the first time is that Sean Bass, VMware CTO for End User Computing, had like 10 minutes of time to talk about EUC and the vision of VMware in a general keynote. And that was the very first time that happened. So I think that kind of shows what the importance of end user computing is within the portfolio of VMware and where the strategy is heading. Now, related to the topics that they covered in both that keynote as well as a couple of dedicated EUC keynotes, one of the announcements was made around the Horizon Universal Control Plane. So there's a new version of a hosted control plane. And that new version introduces more components to the management plane, whereas before it was just a management interface that talked to decentral components as well, like your connection brokers, your databases, your, you know, all sorts of stuff. Most of those components will now move up to the cloud. So every customer that has a universal license, which nowadays is mostly all customers, can freely use that component and use it to basically manage their decentral environment. As well, and this is for VMware, it's pretty new, also control your Horizon Cloud environment hosted on Azure, or in the future, Google Cloud. And they did that already, but now you can have multiple different subscriptions being injected in that control plane. And for instance, spin up a bunch of desktops in subscription one or in subscription two, which are tied to a certain DR location. Now it's completely transparent from an end user perspective as well as at the IT perspective. So it's fairly easy just to spin up a bunch of desktops in a certain location in Azure or in another location or in the future in Google Cloud VMware Engine. So that was pretty cool. It also includes Horizon Operations Center, which allows you to monitor your services, your main services from Horizon, as well as some other services that are tied to Horizon, such as your management service for app volumes or the ones for your zero trust related services like the UAGs and stuff. So that's pretty cool. Workspace ONE and Horizon are more or less, we're two different types of strategies, one for the like traditional side, Horizon, one for the like modern side, Workspace ONE. But they're like slowly kind of coming together and being integrated somewhat more. So if you look at Workspace ONE Intelligence, one of the engines to collect all of the data from like your modern endpoints is now slowly being integrated in Horizon as well to collect information from virtual desktops as well, and use that for both a monitoring as well as an automation perspective. So now it would be able to Workspace ONE Intelligence to collect your user experience data, both at your connection protocol as well as what's happening in your Windows session. So that's pretty cool. Workspace ONE Assist for remote monitoring and remote shadowing is now also being tied in, integrated in Horizon. So you're with Workspace ONE Assist, you were already able to shadow someone on an iPhone or a MacBook, but now you can do that inside the session as well. From an automation perspective, Freestyle Orchestrator was already announced last year, which basically is kind of a runbook kind of solution that lets you fully automate the build of a base image or the build of a physical desktop or physical endpoint with a low-code, no-code interface. And last year it was announced. This year they actually announced like when it's becoming public, and it should be in like a month or so, both for Windows 10, Mac OS, and mobile is being announced as a public or as a private beta, which will be launched, I think, early next year. Workspace ONE and Intel vPro.
Wait.
Really awesome.
What is it going to do on mobile?
For instance, if you have so what you could do with Freestyle Orchestrator is, for instance, after enrollment of an endpoint, based on a decision flow, you could say, well, certain types of, let's say, Android devices or Apple devices will get this application based on this condition. So if if an iPhone is a certain version number, you can specify that a certain application can be delivered with certain parameters. So you can configure an application also during the deployment, but all based on certain runbooks.
But that couldn't be done in Workspace ONE, Dan, based on those conditions.
You could, but the condition sets were pretty basic before, and now that you can create like extensive workflows to do the same thing, but better, and integrate with other solutions as well. So, for instance, you can integrate with ServiceNow or another solution to get certain context into Freestyle Orchestrator and use that for delivery of an application, which makes it much more powerful.
So you have an orchestration and automation engine running in the background, and it's not just a one-time thing where you have a context of a mobile endpoint, but you can actually go back and forth with a ServiceNow and other services to start, adding some more context and your application delivery and configuration.
Correctamundo.
That sounds cool, man.
Yeah, it is really cool. VMware and Intel announced an extensive partnership on the management of endpoints. I've been working with Intel for quite some time now to get the AMT platform, which is used for Nux, to manage endpoints with a vPro CPU. Like you can configure stuff in the BIOS or remotely power it on or power it off. Workspace ONE and Intel vPro have been integrated. So now you can, for instance, remotely through Workspace ONE, power on a bunch of NUC devices, configure them, update them, upgrade them, shut them down again, or secure them from a BIOS perspective as well. So it's really, really powerful. Continuous access control from a zero trust perspective has been announced. So zero trust by itself is really powerful if you continuously are able to check the context of the end user. We weren't able to do that before, but now it is able. Before, we can do that at certain moments in time, you know, at connectivity, when the connection has been established, or when a user clicks on a certain app, or you know, that sort of different types of moments in time. But now we do that on a continuous basis, which makes zero trust real zero trust. And finally, my favorite announcement is the Workspace ONE XR Hub. And this is where three of my four sessions were also kind of about. So XR Hub is a new solution that enables AR, so augmented reality and virtual reality for the enterprise. It can manage standalone AR and VR headsets, which we call HMDs, so head-mounted displays, like you manage a phone or a tablet or a Windows machine through Workspace ONE. So we basically take a device and roll it in Workspace ONE. We can manage it to deploy security profiles, deploy applications, update them, set them to kiosk mode, and make them usable for basically anyone. And the most awesome feature of everything is transparent integration with Cloud XR. So Cloud XR is basically a remoting protocol for virtual reality created by NVIDIA, and that enables you to stream VR applications over the network to a wireless headset, have a great user experience. And why would you need that? This should be the basic question, right? Now, if you take like an Oculus Quest, I got a Oculus Quest version 1 here. It is a great headset, but it's not that powerful, especially if you compare it to a machine next to me with a pretty decent GeForce card in it. If I attach, I got a Reverb G2 from HPE here as well. The quality of the HP Reverb is awesome, but it's also linked through a cable to my machine. Now, the powerful aspect of the Oculus is the fact that it's standalone, it's wireless. The only thing it does need is Wi-Fi. Now, what I can do with Cloud XR is stream an application from my virtual desktop that is linked to a powerful GeForce card, run remote rendering there, have a great user experience, and the only thing that it transfers to the Oculus is basically graphics, and my and Cloud XR sends back the controls of my controllers.
It just dropped on me why you would do such a presentation at IGEL Disrupt. We have a device that is only remoting into something more powerful to actually.
kind of sounds like app and desktop remoting, right?
Well, the presentation I'm going to show this Wednesday is called The Evolution of the Endpoint. And this is where we're heading. You know, we're introducing, so VMware, its own connection protocol, Blast Extreme, is great, but it's not purposely built for VR and AR. Whereas Cloud XR is. And the big difference is that, you know, I did some tests purely with VR streamed apps through Blast Extreme. And what happens if you have jitter or latency is that the application in the streaming will, you know, affect your motion and thus create motion sickness. Now with Cloud XR, they architected in a way that if you have latency, bad bandwidth or jitter or frame drops, the motion inside the HMD is still great, but the textures, the details of the textures will drop, will change, with a result that I always have like 72 frames per second per eye, which never causes any motion sickness, and still have sort of a great user experience or a good user experience, even in low latency or lower latency environments. And using CloudXR by itself is kind of hard to configure or to set up. And this is where VMware stepped up with the XR Hub. So SSO is integrated. The only thing that the end user sees is like the intelligent hub portal. They can click on an application and automatically establish a connection through CloudXR. This is what I'm going to demo. So it's really awesome. And to end the VMware section, what we'll share in the show notes is a complete blog with all of the individual announcements, and see what the and show what the all the awesomeness was from VMware 2021.
The links, I guess, not the complete sessions, right? The links to the information.
But I mean, it's so funny that I mean, for one, I think the way I observe VMworld was, I mean, when Rocky Rakaram entered as a CEO, the keyword was hybrid cloud, and that's definitely one of the key themes that we saw at VMworld. A lot of coverage of SASE, but even in the EUC space, there's so many things being announced that this is a filtered version of all the things shared at VMworld, and still we have probably a lot of things that we've missed. So I think this is cool to see there's so much innovation happening in these conferences. And even, I mean, one of the things that stood out for me at VMworld is you know, the incremental value being provided in experience workflows. I mean, the mobile flows were kind of flawed by design, unfortunately. It worked for mobile, but it didn't really scale for desktop or web.
Yeah, so I definitely forgot that, because Dell Boomi now is the is being introduced, or we should call it Boomi, I think.
It's Boomi, yeah. There's no more Dell included.
Yeah, fully introduced as the mobile like workflow engine for micro apps.
Yeah.
I remember a podcast with somebody why VMware doesn't integrated that. I think it was you, Ingmar, who suggested it.
No,
you should cash on the.
No, I mean, this is something. I mean, we shared it at the moment that the VMware Workspace was announced, which was in around April time frame. That's where VMware announced that they actually are using Boomi. So that was the announcement. Now it's in preview. And at VMworld, I saw that they introduced quick actions, which are instead of actionable notifications, this is a user-initiated action. So, I mean, the reason calling it out is that it has my interest simply because Citrix does micro apps. And so there's an overlap there. There's some differences and overlap, but I'm just glad to see that Citrix isn't crazy. We're not just the only one doing this. VMware sees some value in there as well. Are clever to leverage Boomi. So I'm curious on seeing how that develops. And on the XR thing, it's definitely one of the reasons I'm going to attend Disrupt from IGL. Because, you know, ever since we've done a session with Thomas Poppelgaard, which was also around AR, MR, you know, the amount of possibilities you can imagine are just huge. But just actually starting to use it and having the potential, you know, at your disposal. So having an HMD which provides you with the right experience and the right applications. Still early days, but I'm glad to see there's some movement there.
Yeah, and maybe
definitely.
And Eric made the mention that, or he mentioned like it's just, well, virtual apps and maybe a desktop, but definitely not a desktop in this particular case with CloudXR. But the challenges with getting a good experience with augmented reality or virtual reality, that's pretty severe. So there are a lot of challenges that luckily, thanks to NVIDIA CloudXR, but also as Johan just mentioned, together with VMware, really made it into one single enterprise solution that you could really start using these applications as well. There's another thing about VMware that I wanted to mention, especially also for our, we have an EUC audience, right? I think and maybe Johan can comment on that as well. There was also a lot of a lot of sessions were covering the Tanzu and Tanzu Kubernetes Grid. So the next hybrid apps, or not really the hybrid apps, that's the wrong phrasing, but it's all about containerization. And I think a lot of our listeners who have been working with EUC solutions, this is an all new EUC solution as well, where you just cater remote instances for your data scientists or any researchers within organizations. these people are already working in these organizations, and there's basically they're now just they need to rely on their own technology and their own solutions that they build underneath their desk or somewhere, or just leveraging some cloud resources. But wouldn't it be great if you can just go to a self-service portal and just order an instance with a particular set of resources in order to do your training work, for example? And I think that this is also something that now, together with VMware, it's made much more easier for those people just to consume these resources instead of just building it all the way up from the ground.
But Jitz,
if you want to know more about the topic, and I'm going to give a short shout out to a new podcast that I just launched called the Unexplored Territory Podcast, which is, dives in. It's not an EUC podcast. It basically dives in the VMware space and everything that's happening there. We had a conversation with I'm creating this with Duncan Epping and Frank Denneman, and we had a conversation with Kit Colbert, the new CTO, about most of these projects, like Project Monterey, which focuses on smart NICs and delivery of new technologies based on offloading to ARM chips. We had a conversation about Project. Two different types of projects. Dive into the first episode of the Unexplored Territory podcast and find out. Oh, Project Senda, Barbara.
Shameless plug.
Send Anna, send Clara, send Claus.
Sure.
It's all over the place. Well, talking about shameless plugs and talking about the conference season, we have the NVIDIA GPU Technology Conference, GTC, coming up. So sign up for that one. Yeah, that's a free event. So November 8 till 11. And on the 9th,
are we going to talk about Dockers there?
They also do a lot of Dockers and all those other kind of stuff.
Thanks for that soundbite. Case, are you still with us?
I am. I'm right here. I was just wondering what Tanzu would do for end user computing, but I totally get your blink into data scientists, as that's most of your world.
And probably
part of Johan's world as well. But there's more than one
job.
Containers. You always do a poor job, but we still like you.
Thank you. No. Maybe I did a poor job in explaining this, right? So I always try to explain it like this. When I started with server-based computing and maybe in the early days of VDI.
Like in the mid-60s, right?
Yeah.
Mainframes, all the things.
No, but we always had these projects where you identify all the different workloads running on these physical workstations on a desk of an employee within an organization. And you would always do this assessment on which kind of workloads could be centralized and later on also being virtualized in an environment. But we always had a couple of workstations, which we called the specials, which we kind of left behind because there had maybe some peripherals that were not really capable of running out of the data center or being, you catch my drift on this, right? But also on, in this case, NVIDIA. I'll send
Docker
you a memo.
Docker container, Tanzu, how does it translate into EUC?
Okay, so we had in the EUC space, we had maybe some CAD applications that were not really suitable to get transferred into the data center, because of maybe some GPU requirements. So this is where we're always the specials that we kind of left behind. And after a couple of years, we finally had the possibility, especially with Citrix HX2D Pro, to bring them over to the data center and also provide the flexibility and mobility to those kind of users. You remember those days probably, right? So
we remember the days.
Yeah. So and then in 2013, we even could fragmentize a GPU. We had the NVIDIA Grid, as it was called back in those days, and that made it more cost-effective to cater these 2D and 3D applications out of a centralized and virtualized environment. So finally, we had kind of all the applications that we could serve out of the data center. So now a data scientist or a researcher or someone that it's more into the compute space of using a GPU, they are still left behind because no one really understands their needs. And in the end of the day, they just need resources in order to to do their training. And this is an opportunity also for the admins in the EUC space that you, it doesn't really matter, right? If you're just delivering a Windows 10 desktop with some Office applications, or whether you deliver a Linux desktop or a Linux instance where they can just do their work. It's more or less the same concept. It's the same as with virtual reality. It doesn't really matter if you're delivering a resource that is capable of running any cloud XR workloads. It's
and with in the and end, with that, ladies and gentlemen, and with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's just simplified all of our work into we can publish resources into end-use computing spaces. It, you know, Windows, Linux, containers, doesn't really matter. We can do it all. That's what you just told us, right?
I kind of lost the point with Tansu in there, but maybe we're still getting
they
there.
They also do a lot of Dockers.
It's primarily about Dockers.
Yeah. can you do that again? Because...
what the sound no, bites?
Just primarily about Dockers.
Yeah, that's Tansu, right? But I kind of lost the whole story point gaining up to Tansu.
But basically, what just what? Said is that with self-servicing, you can actually enable scientists, data scientists, to spin up containers with Tansu on the Horizon platform to make them make their applications and data points available. I think that's what he said.
Ah, thank you.
With a lot of words and a few silly faces.
thank you, Jets. And
I do get the part. I do get the part on self-service, and especially when it's microservices and they are like you can orchestrate them to the end user. It makes total sense. I mean, I haven't really read into Tansu. I think it sparked an interest in everyone listening to the EUC Digest to start looking into Tansu and how we can how that's going to help. Anyone else wanted to say something on VMworld or just VMware announcements recently? Also in Clubhouse, just raise your hand if you have an opinion or just anything to say.
I missed Spanish food. That's the only thing I still wanted to say. It's
because it wasn't live over there, but I've seen some pictures of you. You were ordering food from pretty much everywhere around the Netherlands. So, right? Because you did a lot of recordings. No? Did I?
That wasn't me. Sorry, man.
Okay.
It could have been you.
This is one of the most unorganized recordings we have ever done. So this is episode 10 of the Throwdown. We are still kind of unorganized a bunch of people. Anywho, we do have show notes. And in the show notes, I read that, you know, following VMworld, Citrix hosted three individual launchpad events, which are cloud, security, and work. These are three standalone, very short events, well below an hour, hosted live on LinkedIn, which I think is refreshing because it's easy to consume, especially since, you know, they all were followed up by various blogs and videos. So you can read and go into greater detail. Since I work for Citrix, let me give a high-level summary of the topics, which I think are worth sharing and discussing with all of you, also in Clubhouse or later. Just shoot a note. So let me start off by, you know, kicking off with cloud, which was the first launchpad event. That was all around innovations on DAS, application delivery, and security. So the first thing, which is actually not mentioned in the launchpad event, but is relatable, is on the desktop delivery front, we saw that Citrix and Google are expanding their strategic partnership. Last month, we discussed the expanded strategic partnership with Citrix and Nutanix, this time with Google. And they are actually going to announce a new collaboration, which will include launching a new desktop as a service offering on Google Cloud. And as part of the expanded agreement, Google said that Citrix will become the preferred and strategic virtual desktop service partner of Google. And Google will become a preferred and strategic cloud partner for Citrix, which also includes that Citrix will build a foundation of their cloud service on Google Cloud, starting with a Citrix purpose-built management plane on Google Cloud. So it's good to see that hybrid cloud is you know a theme across across all industry leaders.
I don't really get it. Is it a slightly different
announcement? If you just listen to the words that Ingmar just spit out on the ether, basically what he said, and that's the thing that sparks my interest, is build a foundation of cloud services on Google Cloud, starting with a Citrix purpose-built management plane. This is a big announcement because that means that Citrix is now not just hosting their platform on Azure, they're also,
on Google
moving
Cloud
to Google Cloud, which enables Google to kind of accelerate the growth in Citrix services, but it enables Citrix to be less depending on the stability of another cloud platform.
Yes, starting with the A. And yes, so that's one which is new, Eric. And also new is a new DaaS offering specifically for Google Cloud, where Citrix previously announced that their traditional service, Citrix Virtual Apps and Desktop Service, is available also for Google. Now there's a specific DaaS offering, and indeed the management plane. More to come, Eric. So keep an eye on all the news flashes coming out on Google. Another big thing, which was announced at the Launchpad, is that Citrix, well, we knew that provisioning services, you know, a server streaming technology that enables desktops and apps to be provisioned and reprovisioned in real time from one golden image to Azure. We already had that. That's currently in preview. It's also coming for Google Cloud. So PVS also coming to Google Cloud. Hate it or love it. Some love EMCS, some love PVS, some have love for other distribution mechanisms.
Yeah, we all know that a lot of organizations still use it. So I think that's good news.
It's definitely good. Is it only good news, Eric? Now, with desktops running both on-prem and in the cloud, essentially the overhead has just increased, right? So because you're now maintaining your golden image for various platforms, you know, maintain it for your on-prem environment. You manage it for your Azure environment, maybe even for Google. So Citrix introduced the image portability service. And with the service, you only need to create one image at a time. And the service will automatically transfer the image to Azure or Google and, you know, optimize it for that deployment. So I think that's good for those organizations who run hybrid, or maybe because they're still in transition, maybe want to keep it that way. Maybe they want to use both Azure and Google. Who knows? I think it's good that it's there.
Multi-cloud.
Yeah, cloud. It's not just Windows apps and desktops, okay? I think it's a good use case, but it's definitely not the best use case of cloud always. Client-server applications, as well as web and SaaS applications today, they are delivered through an application delivery controller. Citrix used to call that a Netscaler. Today, it's an ADC. You know, they provide load balancing, SSL offloading, layer 7 firewalls, protection against cross-site scripting, you name it. At the Launchpad event of cloud, Citrix announced the introduction of the Citrix App Delivery and Security Service. And this is, and I quote, the industry-first intent-based continuously optimizing self-healing internet-aware application delivery service that radically simplifies the secure delivery of applications. A lot of words, but what I think is cool is that, you know, if you, as an IT admin, previously had an application that you need to provide, right? Whether that's a load balancing exchange or like forefronting your application, there was just a whole lot of things you need to do. It's not just the load balancing and the SSL certificate. There's a lot of security happening. And then what if your internet changes, or what if you run in Azure and, you know, you need more capacity? So this way, it's just one click. You say, hey, I have a service. This is my intent. I want to deliver to my users. And then everything happens in the
background. And it's self-healing. So,
Dude, can you like repronounce that? The industry first,
you know, one based sentence.
Yeah, can you do that? Can you say it one more time, please?
Are you recording so you have a snippet?
No, definitely not. But
okay, there you go. The industry's first intent-based, continuously optimizing, self-healing, internet-aware application delivery service that radically simplifies the secure delivery of applications.
Do you know how that sounds?
Very long.
Like in there's the first thing that came in mind, and this is probably fun for Dutch people who were born before the let's say the 1990s. There was a Dutch series called Jiskefet with a certain scene called Multilil, and Multilil is a creative advertising media and communication consultancy agency.
They are the inventor of the hidden sound.
It's the exact same thing. Yeah.
hidden sound system.
Hidden. Yeah, exactly. Hidden. Anywho, I do think it's good. But let's just move on to Security Launchpad event, because there are so much things that I want to share here. Again, short conference, but action-packed. One of highlights to me was the introduction of Citrix Secure Private Access, or SPA. Secure Private Access is Citrix's new cloud-delivered ZDNA service that adds new capabilities like, you know, adaptive authentication, adaptive access to deliver zero trust access to web, SaaS, but also, and that's especially new, TCP and UDP based applications. So it will replace their existing secure workspace access, which was primarily focused on secure access to browser based applications. And I would say now it's really time to say goodbye to your traditional VPN and switch to a SaaS-y approach. By the way, pretty similar to what we just heard say on VMworld, continuous access, and you know, you don't just want to deploy a VPN which is like an open drain into your data center; it's into the sewer. So please don't do that, and consider this a more SaaS-y-based approach. And last but definitely not least, there was a LaunchBand event on Work. This is the event which centers around the complexities of keeping teams and individual productive and engaged, which quickly became a top priority as, you know, remote and hybrid work became the norm last year because of some weird event. Citrix introduced, well, various improvements of its Citrix Workspace app with, you know, ways to personalize the experience. Organizations can now tailor the experience to fit their corporate teams. Provides a familiar space to users to work. I've seen demos where there have been zero logos of Citrix shown. I think that's good because previously there was a Citrix logo everywhere, which means Citrix got the blame of everything. So let's just hide it and that problem is gone. But also users can create their own experience with new configurable options. And I can tell you this is only the beginning. I've seen way more exciting things on that front, but I can't share because it's just too soon. But I think it's good that the workspace you are using as an end user, that you can tailor it to the way that you want to use it instead of the way your IT admin thinks you want to build, you want to leverage it. Another thing I'm excited about is the introduction of Citrix Workspace App Builder. There's a catchphrase, there is an app for that. And that probably is true when you look at the App Store on your mobile phone, iOS or Android. There is an app for nearly everything. Except when you are in an enterprise or just an organization, because when the pandemic hit, your organization probably didn't have an app to effectively communicate on who can come to the office or where you can sit or see availability or do some form of self-certification with an issuing health certificates. All use cases which, well, we didn't expect we need. So you kind of need something, a service where you can build your own application. And with this new service, organizations can build their own apps, like frequently asked questions, broadcast, employee communications, you name it, you can build new apps with a low-code app platform. This is not really similar, but to me it always feels like, hey, in the past we had Microsoft Access applications, which had its own database, a system of record. You can build your own UI, you can build your own logics, but well, Microsoft Apps kind of made it a hell to migrate applications. And now we have low-code app platforms. So we have the Power Platform from Microsoft. Google has AppSheet. Citrix has a App Builder. So I think this is cool. This is a new space Citrix is entering. And I think this is going to be game-changing.
This is going to be fun maintaining applications when we're like 10 years ahead of where we are now. And we're in the same kind of boat as we've seen with Access applications being built by this one person that was stuck into a situation and now left the company because they're retired and whatnot. So it's going to be interesting to see how well documented and how well maintained these applications will be versus commercial off-the-shelf products.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Low-code app platforms, yeah, or low-code app development, in essence, for one, it's intentionally low-code. Don't say no-code because there is hardly any platform which has no-code on it. But so low-code, because it's modular, it's drag and drop. Sure, you still need to document business logic, and I hope still people are doing it. It typically replaces a lot of manual activities or people going to like a Google Sheets or a Forms, like, hey, fill this in, and then you get an email when someone is going to do it. So it's typically replacing cumbersome processes, especially when the pandemic hit. We had to go to digital processes instead of like going door to door. So yes, I agree. But Microsoft Access was a container. It was one file which had it all, data, logic.
Was it like Dockers and stuff?
Dockers and stuff.
Well, it probably runs on Dockers and stuff. But how does it compare to OutSystems, Mendix?
Good point. So Mendix, OutSystems, and the works. So these are purpose-built, or not purpose-built, all they do is create applications. So they are they create the applications, they create the experience. They can also host the data, so they can also be the system of record. But you build applications on that. Applications that you can distribute, right? So they not only do the UI and the logics and all that, they also do the packaging and the distribution of those applications. So if you see your banking app, it's very likely it's been built on one of those platforms. The solutions you see here, the app builder or Power Platform or AppSheet of those things, are not intended to replace whatever you build your application with. Visual Studio is another one of those development platforms, except it's not low code. So this is intended for organizations, and it's empowering citizen developers, those kind of people, line of business owners, like, hey, I need to build a very specific use case for within my organization. It's not something I need to send to my customers, or I need to send, or an app I need to sell. It's in my workspace. I can use it, and that's all. That's the scope, right? So it's not intended to replace an OutSystems or a Mendix by any means, and neither is Power Platform, Power Apps.
I just wanted to comment on the form factor of Launchpad, because I really like the fact that it's short, it's brief, it's to the point. Kudos to the team at Citrix that came up with this idea of segmenting the topics into something that is easy digestible in a limited amount of time. You know, that should be to me, it's a format that actually works. If you have like 45-50 minutes or an hour spare time, you can actually set, you know, click it, play it, listen to it, and get it done with, instead of these lengthy moments of knowledge transfer where you're not sure if you ever get to a point that you fully understand the stuff that Jitsa is saying. They just say that.
But isn't that coming from the fact that we're all trying to mimic like what we did in real life on this Congress things, DC fans, into a virtual environment where everybody is easier distracted?
Yeah, and so, I think what Casey is saying, and I agree, is that the Launchpad series is not mimicking a conference, because you wouldn't go to a conference for 20 minutes of broadcasting of like, hey, this is what's new, thanks for showing up, and bye. That's not a conference, right? So this is not a substitute for Citrix Summit or Synergy, like one of those big conferences where people gather and you know, get indulged in news and whatever, and whatnot, I should say. But instead, it's just a 20-30 minute broadcast of, hey, this is new, this is upcoming, this is the how and the why, and you know, here's more news. To me, it was easier to consume as well, even though I work at Citrix. I like the change. I still prefer like an in-person conference, but yeah, I like this too.
Yeah, and then coming back to what Johan said, he said like VMware was this was really awesomely done. Did they do the same thing as like last year with VMworld, just like this open space where you can click and view sessions, or did they also kept in mind that everybody was already watching their screen probably and are pretty bored about watching this square box on your... No?
Yes.
So Eric, if I have to compare...
No, there was... If you look at the content catalog... And every session there was that you could click, there was also a link to a dedicated Slack channel, so you could have interaction with both the speaker as well as other attendees. That was pretty it worked pretty well. But dude, again, it was not a interactive real life conference, and nor will any other online conference have that form of interaction. Sure, you can open up a Zoom session for 100 people, a couple hundred people, and everyone like unmutes their mic and starts talking. Again, not the same thing.
But go on.
No, I think what I'm trying to say, that they had in mind, like the Citrix Launchpad, that they were like really concise, snackable content that was straight to the point, like what Case was saying. They had the same thing in mind because it was virtual and not just put in an hour of a lot.
No, you, dude, my session was 20 minutes. All my my Simulive sessions were just 20 minutes of content and 5 minutes of Q&A.
And I think at the keynote, right, the initial, I don't think it even was named a keynote. That's where the, you know, like the snack size news, right? This is like high level, 20 minutes of Sean Bass. Hey, this is EUC. This is what you need to know. You had those sessions. And I mean, VMware chose with VMware to have like in-depth sessions, a whole large catalog of sessions. But you don't have to attend those if you don't want to, right? It should choose, at least for now, to do the launchpad. Hey, this is high level the news in those three themes. Then there are various blogs and videos which are essentially your in-depth sessions, and typically a link where you can click and say, hey, I want to follow up with someone from Citrix.
I think it was the industry's first intent-based, continuous to optimize self-healing, internet-aware.
Conference.
Little.
That radically simplified secure delivery of data.
We'll make sure to include it to Multilil in the show notes.
Multilil well. Advertising.
There you go. So beyond the conferences, some more news. And yes, Microsoft. Okay, so you found some good topics on Windows 11.
Absolutely. So what's a throwdown without some news about Microsoft and their new shiny things? Right? So
that's not a throwdown.
Exactly. So when I was gathering these interesting facts and blogs and videos, I actually noticed a trend in what I found interesting, and that was Windows 11. Besides my natural or maybe somewhat unnatural interest or obsession around user experience and densities, which obviously is triggered by this new Windows release, I'm noticing that this new OS is also triggering me when it comes to the news. And the items I've marked as interesting are as following, and we'll add them to the show notes as well. So one, there was a blog on an easy way to install Windows 11 on unsupported CPUs. There was a blog on Windows 365.
There's already a way to install Windows 11 on unsupported device, which is supported by Microsoft. I read that right.
Yeah,
there's a registry key.
Yeah, let me get to the point why it's interesting, right? So the second one was Windows 365 Enterprise now supports Windows 11. There's a video that compares Windows 10 to Windows 11 with features and changes. And there was a blog post released for the Microsoft Desktop Optimizer tool, which now supports Windows 11. So four things that I thought were really interesting for myself, and with that, I hope it's interesting for the people listening and tuning in as well. So the first item that I've sent in was that it's interesting to see Microsoft forcing us towards a certain configuration with TPM and VTPM and virtualized environments, secure boot, newer CPUs, but it will also allow us to install Windows 11 in a configuration with unsupported CPUs. And like you said, Ingmar, they provide you a registry key that you can set during the installation or before the installation, which will skip the check on the CPU and all the requirements that come with it. Now, I've been thinking about this, and I think it enables people to dabble around with Windows 11 while waiting for newer or supported hardware. Making sure that we can start the application compatibility testing and other rollout procedures as well. So that's my take on this. But I'd love to hear you guys and your opinions
around this. The fact that they check a registry key for kind of supported CPUs means that like the bootloader and everything prior to like reading out a registry was already built with unsupported CPUs in mind. I guess if you look at device management and device context and compliancy, what this switch will do to a managed device, will it show the device as compromised or something else? Haven't tested it yet, but wondering what will happen to like.
I could almost see this little light bulb next to Johan's head kind of flashing on, saying, there's some lab work to do here.
Yeah.
I don't know either, but I can imagine it would at least give a higher risk score in there if you would turn on this registry key.
But it's all about driving adoption as well, right? And as Kees just mentioned, it's also opening up the option for organizations to already start, well, do the test with their applications that they're already running. And maybe it's also due to the fact that these days it's kind of challenging to get new hardware in place due to some supply constraints all over the globe.
All right, so moving on to the second item that I found interesting, as we're all such big fans of Windows 365, which will be interesting in terms of performance, because what impact will Windows 11 have on your virtual machines and your overall performance, considering Azure is using older models in most regions, or older models of CPUs in most regions? We already know that VTPM on a virtual platform impacts overall performance. So what will it do for Microsoft in terms of performance, in terms of density, and what will it do for the end user as well in terms of perceived performance, right? Because if the backend systems are working harder on older CPU to support these newer technologies, what will that do for the end user? Would we require GPUs for everyone? And I know Yitz is going to say yes. But it's something that kind of triggered me when I was reading this. Performance, user density. Come on, guys.
Yeah. I can comment on the GPUs, though. Yeah, you always need a dose, right?
Only NVIDIA supported. Yes.
No, but definitely more resources are being consumed by some backend services, so to speak, right? So user density will be decreased, and overall user experience or perceived performance will be different.
You don't swipe out your credit card to buy a VM. You're getting a desktop as a service. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yes, there will be more consumption based at Microsoft parts, but that's not what you're, as a consumer of it, are going to see in the end.
Let me repeat what I just said, Eric, because I think you weren't listening. I said when it hits the backend system, it means the backend system is working harder. When you have older CPUs, you won't have all the instructions into the CPU.
Yeah, you think it's degrading on your user experience.
Yeah, that's what
it's degrading
said.
An all round. It's degrading on performance within a single machine. And since you are running at scale, and this is the same what happened with not having GPUs inside a virtual platform, your CPU needs to mimic the rendering and the encoding and stuff like that. It's the same with the TPM stuff. And other security related features, which can be offloaded in specific ASICs or specific, complex card ASICs,
for example.
From what I understand, in this Windows 365 and now also including Windows 11, is that this is Cloud PC, right? In my opinion, I think Cloud PC was built with the intent of running Windows 11. Right, because they were already working on it for a long time when a cloud PC was being introduced. So I cannot imagine that it hasn't been built from the ground up with this in mind. It makes sense that this is available. But Eric saying like, hey, it doesn't hurt the end user because all the costs are at the back end. The more cost, the more cycles are needed in the back end, the higher the cost of goods, either less margin for Microsoft or at the end, a price will go up. But again, it's being built with this in mind. So it's good to see that Windows 11 is available in Windows 365 in Cloud PC. I can only assume it is available in Azure Virtual Desktop as well as a template. So I'm curious to see how it's going to impact all the various metrics, as you said. Okay, so I did see a report passing by on the initial results of the impact of Windows 11 in a VDI environment? I just saw the headline.
Yeah, there's a GoEUC blog out there that that talks about this. although I'm not sure if they tested the impact of VTPM. So obviously the item that we brought in was on Microsoft 365, which means you're consuming a service. if you pull this locally and you go via something on-prem or hardware hosted in a co-location, then obviously you will see the impact of VTPM as well, because that will have an impact. Left or right, it will impact the overall density. Yeah. That being said, let's move on to number three, which is a bit of a lighter topic. It's a refresher around the Windows 10, Windows 11 features and changes. It's a video. And to me, it was a good kind of eye-opener for anyone being asked if they should move forward with Windows 11. The obvious reasons being licensing and supportability. But maybe these little nuances in features and look and feel would make you move to Windows 11. So certainly something that I would look at. It's a 15-minute video, which kind of looks at Windows side by side, makes you aware of the little nuances in terms of Windows Start Menu, Windows Explorer, and Control Panel, and kind of comparable items. And last, but certainly not least, is the Microsoft Virtual Desktop Optimizer tool. And I just wanted to mention this, as I think it's rather unfamiliar with our public. And hopefully by now, we've all seen and used tools like the VMware OS Optimization Toolkit or the Citrix Optimizer. But Microsoft, as a company, now has its own optimization tool as well. So run these tools, get better performance, higher densities, and become that hero for your end users, because running a tool like this will impact both the performance on the UX side, on the user experience side, as the density in the back end. And that's just something that that I see people not always doing. And I think, with us being Dutch, we're known as being very cheap. If you can get free performance out of the system that you already purchased, then I think that's a good thing, right?
We're not cheap, we're efficient.
Does anyone already have like some experience with the Microsoft Optimizer tool, or does anyone in Clubhouse have any experience with it?
Perhaps the GoEUC guys already did a comparison of the tools. I think it's good that it's there, for sure. I'm kind of, advocate's devil. Why is Microsoft publishing such a tool if they own the OS? Why isn't this like natively included? Like, hey, I see you're running in a virtual environment, or like, hey, just within your Windows settings, like, I run virtual, so I think that I want to be optimized in this sense.
Maybe it's been thought about afterwards.
Give us...
Click optimize. Yeah,
it's an afterthought, right?
Give us a VDI image, like right from the get-go. You'll have like home, enterprise, professional, and VDI. Give us that. Make it optimized by default out of the box. It's just such a no-brainer to me.
It feels like Windows 11 or Windows isn't developed with VDI or virtualization in mind. There are a lot of things where it is, but you could say like, hey, if I am running on a virtualized environment, then I have different requirements, including like a TPM isn't required because I run in the data center. So secure boot might not be necessary because I'm having counter mechanisms in a different way. And the same goes for the optimizations. If you are deploying this in a Azure Virtual Desktop or Cloud PC or somewhere else, these are the recommended settings. You can tweak it, but it feels like this has to be part of Windows instead of an afterthought. As it is, but that's my thoughts.
I fully agree that Microsoft, if they recognize the power of the workload of end-user computing, it would make sense to make something lean and mean, kind of straight out of the box. Because I've seen customers gaining a lot of density and user performance by user experience. Just by upgrading, updating their image and making sure that that they disable services, disable tasks, all the stuff that we can do with these tools. So it definitely makes sense to go that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, if there's someone who's going to do the comparison of the, let's say, the Citrix VMware, Microsoft, or maybe even independent optimization tools, I'm curious to see if there are differences. Right, like if there are different beliefs or different streams coming in, like, hey, we believe this is like the, a low hanging fruit. You should always do this. Where others might say like, no, you should never disable this service, or you should never do this. So I'm curious if there's anyone interested in looking at that. I think one last topic that I know we're running late many times, but hey, you know, why not? Case, you submitted one other topic, which is around policy pack, which I found interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So
fascinating.
Policy pack, I'm not sure if people are aware of what policy pack is, but it's a desktop management platform that enables you to manage Office and remote endpoints, including browsers, applications, remove local admin rights to implement that zero trust model. You know, they block threats on USB sticks, DVDs, and CD-ROMs. They simplify GPO management, and they can achieve compliancy by requirements. They were acquired by a company called Netrix. And Netrix is a cybersecurity vendor that makes data security easy. And to me, it was interesting that PolicyPack got acquired by them, because I see PolicyPack as a desktop management tool, right? Much in the likes of the former Res and the former Absence, where it was really focused on delivering that workspace in a contextual model, like the industry first contextual. I'm not going to repeat that. But it was very interesting for me to see that a company like that would be acquired by a cybersecurity a company, because I didn't link those two together. But reading through the announcement, it kind of made sense when you look at the way they treat desktops. Like I said, if you remove local admin rights to gain that zero trust model, but also protecting data from removable drives, all that kind of makes sense when you're a cybersecurity company and you want to step into that virtual desktop world. And we all know that financial services, banks, they're big on these security agents. And we also know that they're not meant to be very efficient in terms of resource consumption on the endpoint. So maybe, just maybe, there's this one vendor that understands that a security solution can be lean and mean, and at the same time do what they promise from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, and I think the policy pack is also, it's not just virtual desktops, it's EUC, right? It's physical desktops. It's not just like the monitoring and seeing like and observing and saying like, hey, this is how you need to improve your security posture. But, you know, let me help you with that by acquiring policy pack. So first of all, congratulations to the guys from policy pack. They've done an excellent job. It's you know, it's a fairly small and nimble organization. And then being acquired by a company which is, they're making each other better, right? So I think that's good. I mean, the vendors like PolicyPack, Device Trust, at first you could say like, why would I need this? There are so many other vendors around that can do the same thing, but are just way too big and have too many capabilities. This is very purpose built. So I think this is, a good move by, who acquired them again? I already forgot.
Netrix.
I'll keep reading Netflix, but it's Netrix. There you go.
Right. Any other opinions before we start to wrap up?
No, actually, I don't know the guy. So
you don't?
No,
you don't know PolicyPack?
I never worked with
PolicyPack. Or girls, Eric, or girls, or diverse people.
The people there,
like the people, yeah.
But in your past experience, you never came across PolicyPack, you mean?
No, I never. So I don't know. It makes sense to me that hearing case. That has been bought by a security company that emphasizes on zero trust and in your desktop and into your endpoints. But I don't know the guy, so I never worked with him. Cool. I don't know what
Let this be the trigger all look into PolicyPack. I think these guys deserve it, Netrix as well, because I haven't heard of Netrix and definitely will look into them now, because they made an excellent acquisition. So I think with that, it's time to wrap up this episode of the EUC Digest Throwdown. Thank you everyone for sticking, with us until the end. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Also the people in Clubhouse, thanks for being here. Don't forget to like this video on YouTube, leave a comment, subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you have a topic that you'd like us to discuss in next month's topic, or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us on the social channels or by email on podcast@eucdigest.com. For now, I want to thank you for listening, wish you well, and we'll meet again in the next episode of the EUC Digest Throwdown.